Can at least be hot while the world suffocates me.
I don't follow Corona. What is Corona's Twitter handle?
It's a good question.
I'm not really thirsty, guys. I'm just actually looking because we are debatable sponsored by Corona now, which I'm supposed to say in a little bit, but it's a little spoiler alert. I'm Izzy Gutierrez. That's Charles McDonald.
Hey.
That's David Jacoby. This is Debatable presented by Corona. How cool is that? How perfect of a background is this to be presented by Corona? Like, I'm pretty sure at some point during the show, you'll see Snoop or like Bad Bunny walking behind me. So just, you know, if they wave hi, just move it right along. But again, it's Izzy. That's Dave Jacoby. That's Charles McDonald. And we are Debatable presented by Corona, which is pretty cool. What do we got there, Alabaster? What's our first topic of the day?
Guys, we're actually going to start with some breaking news.
Shocker.
No. This is real breaking news that I think is fun and happened about a minute ago. Ian Rappaport is reporting that the NFL has changed their overtime rule. It has been approved that both teams are guaranteed a possession in overtime, which... this might be disappointing breaking news in the moment, but I think this is actually going to change how we view the NFL. Do you guys like it that we will have an actual fair overtime now in professional football?
Follow-up question.
Before I get there.
Is that just for the playoffs? Is this just for the playoffs, or is this for all overtimes?
Just playoffs.
Only the playoffs.
Well. Just playoffs.
Just playoffs. Okay.
Just the playoffs. Okay. So first of all, a mind-blowing situation here that this is an Ian Rappaport breaking news story, because later in the show there's a different Rappaport who worked for Golf Digest that I wanted to quote, which is crazy that we got two Rappaports Rappaporting. But so what are the details here? So both teams get a chance with the football, so it doesn't matter if you go for two, you just both teams get a chance and that's it, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
This is all right, on the back of the Chiefs Bills game, which we all wanted to see Josh Allen touch the ball again, and he was not allowed to. But then people were pointing out that the same thing happened with Tom Brady and the Chiefs a few years before that. I think this is a good rule. It just feels like this should be naturally what they do. And when you watch a game like the Chiefs-Bills game, I sat there with my jaw open and the game was over, just expecting more football. I didn't want that to end. I might have been financially invested in the Bills as well. That part also might have been why I sat there with my jaw open. But this is who's upset about this? Like, what's the downside?
Well, here, I have a question. And, Charles, I mean, but so if the question is, okay, both teams get the ball, it's fair, right? But once both teams get the ball, and let's just say both teams score a touchdown, from there it is then sudden death, no? And if that's the case, it's still a matter of who gets to go first. Because if you win the coin toss and then you go back and forth, tie, it's still sudden death after that. So how's that different?
I wouldn't say it's fair, but I do think it's better. Because I think, you know, especially when you just go back to the Bills-Chiefs game during the playoffs, these are moments that the NFL should be trying to attain. You know, get Josh Allen on the field one more time. It's just, it's a good product. It's good entertainment. It's good TV. And I think, especially when you're at the playoffs and you're talking about the best players, the best teams, why not give them more chances to show what makes the NFL so compelling, what makes it so brilliant, and why we keep coming back on Sundays, even though we disagree with a lot of things they do from Monday through Saturday.
So let's call it what it is then. It's a different rule for more entertainment. It's not more fair necessarily. It's just more entertaining. It gives the fans what they want a little bit.
Right. The coin toss still is a huge deciding factor in who's going to end up, you know, winning the game at the end of the day. But I like it better than what we previously had. I'm not sure, like, even what the most fair thing would be. Maybe just play
replacing
like
the coin toss with like an Oklahoma drill.
Okay. But it's got to be like two positions that don't hit.
Someone's been watching some spring break videos.
I think anything that's more football related than a coin toss is a more fair way to decide who gets the ball first. Maybe who scored first in the in regulation. Maybe that team should get the ball first in overtime. It shouldn't be a coin flip if it's that important of a situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're never going to get rid of that, though, the coin toss. It's just a staple of American football.
Why the clock? Can you explain that to me? Why is there a clock in overtime at this point?
I guess, I don't know. I would say maybe just because you can't play football forever and it hurts. That would be my biggest thing. But I think when you go to the playoffs, I don't really see why you have to I think the biggest thing for the playoffs would just be to do one quarter, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and just play it out like a normal football game. Probably just don't want to have it going on too long because I think the quality of the game would kind of suffer at some point. But I don't know if there's really ever a perfect solution with fixing football in overtime, because the nature of the game, I think, you don't want it to go on too long because you're just going to have increased injury risk the longer it goes.
The clock is a great question there, Jacob, because it would just feel strange to be playing football without a clock, but really, there is no reason for it in that scenario. Like, you just keep playing until somebody scores in the playoffs.
If you're taking the tie off the table, why is there even a clock? What are we moving along? When the clock gets to zero, what is the significance of that if it's a tie game? I don't understand.
Just for records, we had to play an entire another period, a second overtime. Is that what you would call it? A second overtime?
Yeah, second overtime.
Like an extended overtime.
Yeah, yeah. It's a philosophical discussion.
Me personally, I'm with Mike Tomlin. I do not fear sudden death. I frankly fear sudden death, but I don't fear sudden death in football. And I think, you know, like he said, you had 60 minutes to get this thing done. Like, yes, the coin toss is not really the ideal situation there, but you also have the opportunity to stop that team. So I'm a fan of getting it over with. I like the drama. It's a little like you know, the majors in tennis, right, where they go to a limit in the what do they call that in tennis when you go extra? Come on, Charlie.
I got nothing for you. why are you throwing that to me? I don't know. You think I watch tennis?
Anyway.
No help from us. Yeah. What do you call that tennis?
I just threw a dead tennis fish out there
frames,
to you guys.
Match point things.
Yeah. Thanks to my the team of producers back there somewhere not listening to a word I'm saying. Thanks for all that.
No,
help
I didn't
there.
Know if you were talking about to Charlie or Charles. I mean, tennis.
Yeah,
This is an issue of too many Charleses. Tennis is interesting because they have different tiebreakers depending on the tournament. Certain Grand Slams just allow them to continue to play so that we have a true winner. That's what we saw in Wimbledon with Mahut and Isner. Some of them go to a 10-point tiebreaker, my personal favorite. It's basically,
yeah, didn't they just change that? They just put them all at 10-point cap for the fifth set,
for
right?
the deciding or the last set. And that's great because it's, you know, getting to seven in tennis when you have someone with the big serve is, you know, pretty much a game ender once you get a mini break. But, yeah, I'm all for adjusting overtime. And to your point, Jacoby, I'm glad you got us back to the real basic part of this. Time is just a social construct. We don't need a clock.
It really is.
It really doesn't make any sense.
It's full
I mean, how long is this show? Nobody ever knows. When you get done with the show, aren't you surprised at what time it is? You never know. Sometimes it's 1 o'clock.
No,
sometimes it's 1:40.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Corona.
That's right.
All right, guys. Should we move on to some NBA basketball?
Love
sure.
to.
All right. Let's do it. All right. So the Grizzlies beat the very shorthanded Warriors last night, which, you know, in the doldrums of the NBA season might not be that significant. But they just keep winning without Ja Morant. And our question, what does that tell you? That they keep winning without their best player and, you know, at one-time MVP candidate Ja Morant.
Yeah, don't undersell those undermanned Warriors because they sent the Miami Heat into a tizzy. And so they can actually win a game. And doing this, I mean, 18-2 without Ja Morant this season. Never heard a better case for Joel Embiid for MVP, because it's just shocking. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's the whole Ewing theory. Oh, are they better without? Of course they're not better without him, but they keep having these types of games. They scored, what was it? It was the biggest differential ever in a game this year without Ja Morant on the floor. And so this is a team that's loaded. They're strapped. Like, they've got guys who are super confident they can do anything on a basketball floor, and they just kind of do it and somehow still fulfill all their roles. It's just, I mean, I don't know if Taylor Jenkins is coach of the year. Maybe he is, but or maybe this is just sort of an underrated group of individuals. But what it tells me is this is a team that made that leap, is in the top tier of the Western Conference, and probably going to compete in a conference championship series.
I think the coolest thing about what the Grizzlies are doing right now is they're not only winning, they're like beating people the hell up. So last night they won 123-95. They beat the Bucks 127-102. Excuse me. They beat the Pacers 133-103. And I just find it fascinating that not only are, you know, they're winning, but they're just blowing people out without their best players. So, you know, I think if you're a Grizzlies fan, you got to be looking at this like, the sky's the limit for what we can possibly do this year. I think it's because I'm not sure that I expected this Grizzly squad to be here at this point in like their development. But now they're at the point where they're undoubtedly one of the most talented teams in the NBA. And you're getting guys a lot of exposure and a lot of minutes with Ja Morant being out. I mean, last night with the Warriors game, no one played over 30 minutes for the Grizzlies' entire roster. Like this is a really deep basketball team. They're really impressive. And, you know, they got to be one of the most feared teams when it comes to the playoff race.
Triple J was out too, right? Jaren Jackson was out last night too.
Mm-hmm. None of this makes any sense. I reject the fact that they are 18-2 without Ja Morant. Like, I understand that that is an objective fact. It is a quantitative data that I can't argue with, but my body rejects it. It doesn't make any sense. They just keep winning without their best player. And one thing that people don't really understand about this team is they haven't had Dylan Brooks the entire year. He's back
he
now.
He just got back this month. I didn't even notice that until a few days ago.
Yeah, like he literally took more shots than Ja Morant last year per game. Like he is a true scorer. He's very confident. And Dylan Brooks is a big piece of what they do, and they didn't have him all season long. So, you know, the risks just get richer when you add him. But like this 18-2 without Ja thing makes no sense to me whatsoever. And what's been so delightful about this Grizzlies team is like, they really seem like a college team. Like, they seem like they're really having fun. Like, they really like each other. The way they celebrate for each other in those post-game interviews and everything. Like, this team is blowing away whatever expectations we had for them. They're playing with house money. They're not expected to win a championship or even the West. But they are trending in a very good direction to one day be in that conversation.
If you look back at last year and just watch the way they play, it almost felt like Dylan Brooks is the one that gave that group confidence. Like, Ja Morant obviously has it as well, but Dylan Brooks seemed to show it a little bit more. He seemed to be that really tough guy defensively. I had somebody tell me earlier this year that he was going to be a problem for them offensively when he comes back, even though he's such a great defender. I was like, what are you talking about? I think he's a perfect fit on this group. And yeah, he has been. And, you know, you look around that Western Conference and you just sort of, you know, Phoenix, but if they win it all, we're all going to look back and say, wow, what a waste of a year, because they were dominant the whole time. We should have seen it all the time. Right, but so right. We put them on the side there. But outside of them, I could see the Warriors, you know, messing around and losing in the first round. You know, you could see, you know, Utah, some of these teams that, you know, might want to turn it up a little bit in the playoffs, not really having it, and Golden State being there too. So you look at Phoenix and you look at Memphis and saying, if you look at their track record, their resume for the season, those are the two most suited to make their runs through the Western Conference.
This is listen, you said something that no one's really talking about, is the Suns like stumbled out of the gate. I think they started out like 2-4 or something. But since then, they've been far and away the best team in basketball. And with Chris Paul back, like, there is no other team in the Western Conference that I would even consider picking against them in a 7-game series. Even the Grizzlies, even with Ja, like, it is the Suns' season this season. It definitely feels like that they're just going to have to play whoever it is in the Eastern Conference. But the Grizzlies, again, every time they win without Ja Morant, every time they prove us wrong, and now Alabaster wants to interject.
Jacoby, are you sure about that? You're not still, scared of the
Lakers
in an 8-1
match? Alabaster, stop it. I will leave. I will leave. Listen, I vacated that take real estate a long time ago, Alabaster. I've moved on.
That's
because you were alone on that island. Everybody had already left, and you were still standing there like, I don't know, maybe.
Hey, look, I heard the Anthony Davis practice yesterday. Who knows?
I do think it's worth noting, though, on top of what Jacoby said, we have just sort of accepted that the Suns are really good. They are borderline historically good. They're 61-14. They have an all-time point differential, and they could become one of the, if they get above the 66 win threshold, the 18th team in NBA history to do that. 12 of those teams have won the NBA title. So it's like the way they're performing in the regular season is very indicative of a team that we should be taking seriously as a finals threat, and not just paying attention to the Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami, Eastern Conference bloodbath that seems more interesting.
And they're not missing anything. Not only, like, you ask how do they win, it's everything. Like, they have structure on offense, they have shooters, they have bigs, they have defense. Like, Mikal Bridges is an amazing player that gets underrated entirely. And so, yeah, I mean, defensively, I think they can be overwhelming at times, just how good they are. DeAndre Ayton, man, like, bet on himself and is having a great year. So there's no one way they can win. Without Chris Paul, you almost didn't even notice he was gone. So, yeah, Phoenix, like I said, if they end up winning it all pretty easily, we're all going to be like, well, Probably should have seen that one coming.
One thing that Phoenix has done in the from last season to this season, which has improved them a lot, which is a rare noun, JaVale McGee. Like, don't forget when Sarge went down, DeAndre Ayton gets a couple fouls early. Next thing you know, you've got, like, Frank Kaminsky in there guarding Giannis or whatever. But, like, they've really bolstered their front court to back up Ayton in a way that's been very significant, especially in those minutes when he has foul trouble.
He's kind of perfect for that spot. Like, you just trust him to do what he does. And they utilize him perfectly, it feels like.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before on here, but I think the development of JaVale McGee, like, over his career has been pretty cool to see, where, you know, he was this guy who just big, goofy, athletic, gets clowned on for trying to get these triple doubles with blocks and rebounds. But now he's, like, developed into a real role player, like someone that can be a really useful part of your team. And, you know, it took him a while to get there, but it seems like he's had a pretty positive impact on just about every team he's joined over the past few years. And I think that effect has also helped the Phoenix Suns get off to, you know, this crazy start that they're off to this year.
Well, his arms and legs don't get any shorter the older he gets.
Yeah. So
would anybody take the Grizzlies over the Suns in a 7-game series? Would anybody
do that? I was just about to ask you that. No. And the next part of that question was going to be, all right, so in the playoffs where things, you know, sort of taper down a little bit, you've got Ja Morant. You need him to be that superstar. You need him to be that go-get-it. It's not going to be as wide open. What do we think? Do we think that this team, when best of 7 series, can actually sort of, hey, find their structure, find their rhythm, you know, their go-to half-court offense and really be something, or, you know, present maybe a challenge to the Suns? Or is it like, we'll see what they look like in the playoffs and then next year they have to make that adjustment?
I think they should be expecting to get, you know, at least win the first round for sure. And I think Western Conference Finals is a fair expectation for them. Just based on how they played the season, knowing they're going to get Ja Morant back. Like you said, I wouldn't take them to beat the Suns, but, like, this team is in this conversation already. And, like, there's still years and off seasons for this team to grow, and Ja Morant's going to get better probably. So I think it's just a really exciting time because it's just fun to see, like, these powers grow right before your eyes in the NBA, especially. It's different than the NFL because you get to see their faces, you get to become more attached to the players. And like this Grizzlies team is just so electric and so much fun. But I think that, you know, when you get down to the Suns and Devin Booker and Chris Paul and some of the other guys they have, it's going to be a bit much for where the Grizzlies are right now.
I feel like Jacoby's been thinking about this for a while.
Well, you know, it's time for a hot take from Jacoby.
Go for it.
I could see this team losing.
Wow.
I could see this I could see this team losing to a Clippers team that has Paul George. I could see this team losing to a Minnesota Timberwolves team with, like, a Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards.
That'd be funny.
Russell. Like, I could see this being a 6-7 game first round series, and I could also see them losing in it because I still feel that this Grizzlies team is in that let's get playoff experience before we make an actual run at a title, and they also need to bolster especially their front court a little bit beyond Jaren Jackson Jr. and Steven Adams.
The warmth of that take is debatable, brought to you by Corona, because you said I could see it, and I could see it is not really a take. I mean, I could see it, but am I believing in it? So you've got to make that next step.
Okay.
That just made me think of warm beer, by the way, which is not the best.
Well, all right, go ahead, Alabaster.
Go ahead, Charlotte.
I just, a couple things. I just love that we just lukewarmly praised the Grizzlies and then turned it into a topic about the Suns. A flagrant disrespect to this new grit and grind era. And also, Jacoby, what's your deal with playing teams? You just love playing teams that haven't played well over this 82-game season.
Yeah, can I ask you about something you just said?
The Clippers are missing Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and they're winning basketball games. And they're getting Paul George back. I think no one's talked about the Clippers this entire season for good reason, because they're missing their two best players. But I could see them beating the Grizzlies in a 7-game series.
Okay, but you brought up playoff experience and said the Timberwolves too?
Listen, again.
Patrick Beverley, playoff experience.
Yeah, exactly. You can sign me up for Anthony Edwards, Ja Morant 7-game series today. That would be so much fun. I'm trying to see a brawl.
Before we move on to the next topic, you were talking, Charles, about sort of NFL players and their anonymity, and NBA players. You could see their face. So sitting in LA on Wednesday, a team that was like several games under 500 on a Wednesday, and it was just star-studded. Like, it's amazing being in LA. But Cooper Kupp walked by. I swore it was Jake Paul for like half an hour. Like, didn't realize it was Cooper Kupp. Dude just had the best receiving season. Just a, you know, great Super Bowl performance. I have no idea who you are. Crazy.
Yeah, I had that moment yesterday when they announced the Hard Knocks trailer. They had Dan Campbell next to Jared Goff, and I was like, I don't know who the hell these other guys are. Just faceless Detroit Lion players.
All right, what else do we have?
All right, guys, we are actually going to move on to the NFL. And our question, what do you make of the NFL's expansion to the Rooney Rule?
All right, so the Rooney Rule expansion, they've done a few things here in the NFL, but primarily you're talking about they are now including women in the category of minority candidates, so it would satisfy an interview of a minority candidate if you interview a woman for a coaching job. And what was the other part of it? Oh, so offensive, you have to have one minority candidate on your offensive staff, and it has to be somebody that works closely with the head coach. So it requires all 32 teams to hire a minority offensive assistant coach as early as next season. And Charles, you know, a lot of people debate what the effectiveness of the Rooney Rule. I think it's part of Brian Flores' big beef was that it just creates a sham interviews, and they're not really getting get a specific or realistic opportunity there. I don't know if these changes do much, but there are also people that say, hey, a lot of minorities wouldn't even be given a look, initial look, if it wasn't for the Rooney Rule. This expansion does what for you?
Is complicated because I think the Rooney Rule as a whole, I mean, it's been a failure. I don't really know if you can really argue against that. Because right now we have Mike Tomlin, Lovie Smith, and Mike McDaniel down in Miami, representing the black head coaches, in the NFL. So, you know, 3 of 32, I don't really know if you can call that a success. But what I will say about this adjustment is they finally addressed like part of the pipeline that they can actually change, because I don't think that you can get, you know, these billionaire owners to care about diversity in their workplace. But we know that these teams, when they go out to hire head coaches, they're looking for offensive guys for the most part. They're not, you know, defensive guys.
What's that ratio like? Like probably 3 out of every 4, right? Like,
yeah, I would say about now, because the only guys that really gotten hired on the defensive side have been Brandon Staley, Matt Eberflus in Los Angeles. You got Lovey in Chicago, or
Quinn.
No, Houston, excuse me. Dan Quinn, he's a DC. He got fired a couple years ago in Atlanta. So yep. It's mainly offensive guys. And if you look at the disparity before this rule, you can look at it right now, there aren't a whole lot of black coaches on the offensive side of football. I think there are more on defense. So when you're talking about guys who are actually getting jobs and who are getting put into the spotlight in the pipeline for these jobs, it's usually offensive guys. And when you think about who are the guys that get offensive coordinator jobs, like a lot of it is like former quarterbacks. Think about Kevin O'Connell just got hired by the Vikings this year. We have guys like, you know, Jim Harbaugh, who have been in the league, Frank Reich, who have been in the league. These are the guys who end up getting these jobs after their playing days. Ain't a whole lot of black quarterbacks, you know? This is a fairly new
That's
phenomenon.
That's fascinating to me, right. Yeah. When you sort of work down the pipeline and realize how – and, like, so I was just sitting there trying to figure out, like, why all the offensive coaches, you know, are white or whatever, and why the defensive coach or the minority candidate seem to have a ceiling at defensive coordinator, and that makes all the sense in the world right there. So you need to sort of force the door open to have – and so the part about this needs to work closely with the head coach. Well, that's what you're trying to do, right? Create a relationship, not just succeed on the field and say everybody can get credit, but create a relationship to where, hey, if I'm pitching this guy for the next head coaching job over so-and-so. So that makes all the sense in the world.
Right, yeah. So I don't think that I can convince, you know, owner X to, hey, you should definitely look at more diverse hiring practices in general. But if I say to him, you need to have someone next to your head coach that does not look like your head coach, like you said, that's a relationship that can be formed. And then you get to vouch for someone in the next hiring cycle. And I think that that's where the change starts to go. I don't know how successful this is going to be, because at the end of the day, the final line you have to cross is getting an owner to sign off on it. But the pipeline is, you know, being addressed in some capacity now. And I think that that's a big deal that people aren't talking about.
There's it's sort of interesting that this comes out right on the heels of that photo that we've all seen of all of the head coaches in the NFL in one place at one time. Just the pure optics of that, the people, the head coaches that are running these franchises look nothing like the athletes that are playing on the field. And there's those optics. And one thing that really really drills home to me the need for diversity in NFL front offices is draft day. Whenever you see that like shot of like the conference room of the people making the personnel decisions, it looks like an accounting firm. Like it looks like a very homogenous people that are making those decisions. It's not just the head coaches, it's the entire staff. And listen, I think that the Rooney Rule did create opportunity. Hey, you have to have an interview. But as Brian Flores expressed, a lot of the times it felt like these were just someone checking a box, not taking that minority candidate seriously. So I do like the idea that they are mandating someone that has to be there. However, it is indicative of the fact that they have to mandate it, because they shouldn't have to mandate it. It should happen organically. But it's better than just having, you know, oh, you have to interview a candidate, because anybody can just check that box by doing a Zoom interview with Brian Flores, as he alleged.
I like that you chose the word mandate, because I also woman-dated a little bit there with throwing female candidates in here. And like, the first thing that you hear, like, this is how sinister the NFL is. The first thing that you think of is like, oh, wow, so they're going to just go around the minority rule and interview two women. And then all of a sudden, boom, they don't have to interview any minorities. And it's just like, wow, how much do they hate minorities in the NFL? I don't think that's going to be something that's going to be that transparent there. But where do you guys stand on that, them sort of getting a little bit ahead of the game here and say, hey, women coaches in the NFL is a real thing, so let's just take a step ahead and say, hey, they're included in the minority list?
I think it's a good thing. I'm not sure how I feel about them being lumped together, because I think, especially over the years, like, we're going to see more and more women enter the ranks of coaching in the NFL. And like, if you talk to them, like, they're just as sharp as any other coach in the league. So I'm not sure how I feel about like lumping them together, because I think, you know, you should be able to separate them and have, hey, here's two more candidates for you to interview. And when you're looking at any organization, not just the NFL, but just having a wider group of people to talk to and figure out who needs to come join your organization is a good thing. So, you know, I think this is a step in the right direction. Personally, I would have like say, hey, minority and women, let's make it two separate things, just so we can keep flooding the marketplace with more ideas, more different people. But it's better than nothing, I guess. And I think the sad truth of the matter is, if we don't do this, the NFL owners will not do this, because they don't care. So you have to kind of force their hands a little bit.
Yeah, I know one thing, and this is completely irrelevant to this, but I know when I need football advice for my flag football, I go to my partner's sister, not to him, because she's a better offensive mind. Just FYI. What else do we got there, Charlie?
I have so many follow-up questions.
Nope, we're moving on.
Follow-up questions.
She's a quarterback. She's won more trophies.
Yeah, I was about to say.
No, Jacoby. No.
So many follow-up questions.
We'll talk after the show. I don't want to do this to Charlie. Or Corona, for that matter.
I lost a card.
But if they want to sponsor our tournament, that's all good.
I actually lost a card that used to say, please no flag football talk, Izzy. So you're
Lose it, or did I send somebody in there to get rid of it?
Unclear, but it's gone. By the way,
thanks, Cortez.
Shout out to Charles McDonald, by the way, who had a fantastic tweet about the NFL coaches meeting, pointing out that Matt Rhule's pants were just purely ridiculous in that photo.
Dude,
so
everything about Matt Rhule.
I haven't seen his pants. Right, I'm gonna have
he's way too rich to have pants that saggy, bro. Like, I just don't understand. But guess he can't so fit.
Why was he standing like this? Like, it's just like he looks so uncomfortable.
Just stiff, and his pants were nasty.
$10 million a year, Matt Rhule.
And you live in Charlotte, bro.
That is zero effort.
I know you can find some good pants in Charlotte that aren't that expensive that also look nice.
Get some great pants.
You're doing your frame a disservice, Mr. Rhule.
Matt Rhule, I'm going to be home back in Charlotte sometime this summer, maybe for my birthday. Let's kick it. I'll take you over to South Park Mall, and we can go shopping for some clothes.
Please don't hang out with Matt Rhule on your birthday. Please don't hang out with Matt Rhule on your birthday.
He's got to buy me some if I do.
All right, we are going to move on and pivot to golf. And our question, what's your reaction to news that Tiger Woods is going to exhaust every effort to try and play the Masters?
Exhaust is another good choice of words, because I feel like some people are exhausted by Tiger Woods and his efforts to play, but this isn't, to me, entirely different. I think this, like, okay, first of all, it's the 25th year anniversary of his sort of golf-breaking 1997 win out there, and, you know, he's coming off of this horrific injury where, you know, you hear things about him being lucky he didn't need a prosthetic, you know, definitively his golf career being over, you know, that type of stuff where he was this close, and... You know, he played with his son, and people were saying, hey, he looks really good. He looks like he could be back on tour. He's saying, hey, probably not yet. But this is the Masters. This is the only thing he really, like, if he were to just cut out everything else of his life, this is the one thing he'd want to do over and over again. Like, people say, well, let Tiger live. Why does it matter? Nope, this is Tiger living. He wants to play in the Masters every single year until he's no longer existing. And so the fact that he is around potentially, you know, wanting to play in this tournament and can, because he's on the starters list, or I think that's what it's called, and can basically doesn't have to give them much of a heads up at all. He can just sort of test it and then say, hey, I'm going to play a week before. So... I'm super intrigued. Not that there's any chance that the guy's going to win, but look at the things that he's been through, and one of the, like, my favorite athletes of all time, right? One of the greatest athletes of our lifetimes, and he's about to try this at age 46. That, to me, would be wildly impressive.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Nope, I think it's interesting just because it's Tiger Woods, and we all know that he has gone through a lot over the past year, and I mean, I just know from my reaction back when the car accident happened, I was wondering, like, is he alive? Two, is he ever going to play again? Once we found out that he was alive. And you're talking, what, like 13 months, 14 months removed from when that car accident happened? Yep. To make it back to the Masters would be, like, an incredibly impressive achievement. Just based on what we know about the injuries he's had in the past as well, to bounce back from those injuries and a car crash and get back to the Masters in about a year's worth of time. I think it's a huge deal just on the feet of the human body, and it's even bigger because it's Tiger Woods.
If you're one of the other golfers that's actually going to compete for this Masters title, you've got to be a little tired of Tiger Woods always just kind of popping up and sucking the air out of room. Like, you have to be a little tired of it. Tiger Woods, if he does compete, we're all rooting for him to compete. But if he does compete in the tournament, he does not have a chance to win it. But there is a 100% chance that he will take up all of the coverage. Like, there's got to be a little piece of the other golfers that are like, Tiger Woods somehow always makes it about Tiger Woods when it shouldn't be about Tiger Woods. And he says he's going to exhaust every effort. I don't expect him to actually play. But what this tells me is that he has not played in his last Masters. That we will see him.
If Michael Jordan tried to play for the Charlotte Hornets in the playoffs, you'd be all about it.
Oh,
you would
sure.
be all about it.
I would fly to Charlotte, okay. Buy Matt Rule some pants, and yes. and buy some. I'll buy Matt Rule floor seats for that one. So me and Matt Rule will go
Tiger
fan
Woods.
Shopping and then go.
Whoa,
watch Michael Jordan.
You're gonna go to Charlotte and not hang out with me?
No, listen. I love playing teams as this show has chronicled every week, every Tuesday.
Tiger Woods
playing Jacoby
blows air into the building. He does not suck the air out of the building. He like, especially for those first 2 days. If you're a golfer that just wants to go on a run quietly and just not worry about all the noise, then yeah, you love the fact that Tiger Woods, at least for that Thursday and Friday, is going to take up all the headlines and all the cameras and all the, you know, all the viewers, frankly, all the fans. There. So, look, I mean, Golf Digest, this is how huge of a figure that Tiger Woods is. Golf Digest, this was the other Rappaport I was talking about earlier. Hang on, I gotta find his name here.
It's good. Michael Rappaport.
It's Dan Rappaport, another Rappaport reporting for Golf Digest, and they went through an entire, like, an investigation, what we know, what we think, and all of these things about Tiger Woods, and just to see if he's gonna play, you know, 36 holes of golf, and, like, that's the type of figure that he is. And frankly, what was it? What was it, 18, 19? What year did he win it? That everybody was just like, holy crap, he just did that again, and you're putting nothing past him. That year, we all said we're never going to put anything past Tiger Woods, and this is another example of, hey, look, I'm not saying he's going to win it. I'm not even going to say he's going to make it to the weekend, but after all that, just to see him play on this course again, I'd pay for it. I'd love it.
Well, it is on ESPN. All right. It's on ESPN Thursday and Friday.
Really? So, I didn't know that. So,
okay. Wait, when does Masters start?
So actually, there's no debatable those days, so watch the Masters on ESPN.
No debatable what? Alabaster?
No debatable presented by Corona next Thursday and Friday. Thank you.
Crizona is a different right. altogether.
Moving on. We have one quote. We have one whodunit for you. And here's the quote. I can do everything your favorite quarterback can do. Hopefully, I'm your favorite quarterback, but I can. Like, that's just what my talent speaks for that. And your choices are Drew Locke, Jameis Winston, Tua Tagovailoa, or Nathan Peterman.
I'm going to go. I can confidently cross C and D. One, because no one would interview Nathan Peterman right now. And two, and Tua would never say something like this. So, you know, Drew Locke is low-key a wild boy, and he can sling it 80 yards. I'm going to go with Drew Locke, my guess.
I don't know. It's the opposite. Well, Drew Locke is the, I think, the obvious one, right? I think he's the one who you would see this and say maybe he's definitely. Tua, I feel like maybe you got him after, like, a round of golf, and he got, like, 4 or 5 beers in him and maybe said something like that. But I think I would have heard that by now. So I'm going to go with A or B. And, I mean, I'm going to go with, wow, they both might be, I'm going to go with Jameis.
This is so clearly a Jameis Winston. And this is, I'd be shocked if this was anyone but Jameis Winston. But I just love, I can do everything your favorite quarterback can do. I just love that so much. He's like, who's your favorite quarterback? I can do that too. Who's your favorite quarterback? Warren Moon? I can do everything that Warren Moon can do. Doug Flutie? I can do everything that Doug Flutie can do. This is definitely Jameis Winston eating W.
I can do everything your favorite quarterback can do. Hopefully, I don't have a favorite quarterback, but I can. Like, that's just what my talent speaks for that.
I don't even think he's
wrong.
You can
also do what your least favorite quarterback
can do. Exactly, but that's the problem. Like, he's the best and worst quarterback in the NFL at the same time. That's how you get 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
Johnny Manziel could do a lot of the things my favorite quarterbacks can do, but I don't want my flag football team. On the other hand, I'll take him. And since he's only playing 7-on-7 these days, our league 7-on-7.
Wow!
Come on, Johnny. Wait. I've got the league for you, buddy. But anyway,
Alabaster, can we run that clip of Jameis again? Because I'm really curious about the art on his wall. It looks like it's like a photo of someone lying down in the woods taking a picture of the
quarterback. But I can. Like, that's just what my black and white.
That. Yeah, that was one of those ads on Instagram that just came up, and he was like, "You know what? Purchase."
Sure. Yeah, he's like, "I'd rather just like, buy this than have it follow me around." That's happened to me. I've been, I've non-consensually bought things on Instagram because they serve them to me so many times.
What's the worst impulse buy? I have. It's not a bad impulse buy, like in terms of it wasn't a lot of money, but it was terrible and a dumb decision. But you guys have a couple impulse buys on Instagram?
Oh, I bought a one of those long lighters, but it's just like electric at the end, and it's kind of cool. Like you touch it, and it comes on. You can like light candles or you know other stuff with it.
Grilling. A lot of grilling.
Yeah, a lot of grilling, but I lost it like a week after I bought it. So
was that just a solar eclipse over there in New York? What just happened?
What have you been up to on Instagram where the algorithm is serving you lighters to purchase? Lighters.
Hey, mind your business. Mind your business.
Well, mine is worse because you're going to ask the same question. And so the one that I got was a phone charger, right? But on the end where you plug it in was a little Dalmatian puppy sort of humping the end of the charger. And I was like, well, this, I've never gone from view to purchase so quickly. And it was such a huge mistake because it makes a loud noise while it's charging your phone. And that's just the worst. So
what's the noise sound like? It was just like a machine,
just over and over again. So you can't like charge your phone at night with that thing. You've got to charge it in another room, which defeats the purpose altogether. And so, you know.
Well, I've learned that.
Do the noise one more time again.
I don't know how to spell that.
Well, I've learned that that maybe you don't need a camouflage raincoat that is also overlaid with a bunch of multicolored butterflies. I've learned that from purchasing on Instagram. That they're very good at taking pictures of clothes, but when you see the actual clothes, you're like,
camouflaged raincoat. Listen. So is it of rain?
It's bad.
Or is it camo?
It's really bad. It's camouflage.
And have you ever seen a bunch of butterflies out in the rain? That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
None of it makes any sense. But that's what I purchased. Mm. Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
All right, Jameis. Thanks for that talk.
Can I pivot us back to the Saints for 1 second? Because it's worth noting.
Oh, Taysom Hill. We got the Taysom Hill breaking news.
It was announced that Taysom Hill is now one of the highest paid tight ends, exclusively tight ends in the NFL. I love your reaction to that.
He's making Does the money feel any better when you reclassify it? Like, either way, it's still embarrassing. You shouldn't be the top paid anything. You should be the top paid backup at every position. How about that?
Is that breaking news?
Yeah, Taysom Hill. They said he's going to play tight end. He's no longer going to play quarterback. He also covers punts. He covers punts like this.
How good would he be if he just focused on one thing his entire career right now? Like,
is he still not that good?
Is he like a good bad football player or a bad football player?
He's not even good. And I know that I'm a Falcons fan, so this might be biased, but that guy is like the most overrated player in the NFL. Like, I don't understand what their fascination is with him. Like, he's not.
I don't know how you can argue with that. Like, he is literally highest paid tight end. Like, that's ridiculous. Of course, that's overrated.
He can't play quarterback. Like, the only thing he can do is like run little single wing offense, which is unfortunately good enough to beat the Falcons like 2 times a year. So that guy, it makes me sick. Like, the way people talk about him. Next question.
All right, I don't want to make you sick on camera. Let's just keep going. Taysom Hill, it's off the table for the rest of Charles's debatable career.
It's been a
tough
8 days for me. Okay, I'm still reeling from the Matt Ryan trade. Like that hurt my feelings in a very tangible way. Like, it's funny. Like, you know, you get online and like, I've definitely made like the Falcons being bad part of my content, but that hurt my feelings, like, for real. It's like, damn, you guys are laughing at something that actually upset me. That's okay.
You know what? I never mocked you because I felt some things. I never really talked about it, but I felt some things when Dwayne Wade signed with the Chicago Bulls. I felt some things. And that wasn't even, like, my childhood. That was my full adulthood. And, like, I did this, like, voiceover piece for SportsCenter, and I was, like, in my living room, and I was like, man, this is not how I'm supposed to be feeling as an objective journalist. So I just turned off the TV and walked away.
They didn't try to get Dwayne Wade out of there for an alleged serial predator, too. It's pretty bad. See.
I said Bulls, by the way. See? I said Bulls. I didn't even mention the Heat. And yet we get a card that says, please keep the Heat culture to a minimum. Which is better than the old card, which said, please, no more Heat culture talk. So, all right, that's it. No more Heat culture.
All right, we can move on, but it is worth noting.
Although, did you see that Eric Spoelstra changed up the starting lineup yesterday, put Max Strus in for Duncan Robinson. Boom, all of a sudden, everything's fixed.
Strus.
Can I move on?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Please. Worth noting that Dwayne Wade also signed with the Cavs and is now, you know, a part owner of the Jazz. Just not really a Heat lifer at all. Charles, before we move on, I do want to cheer you up, and I have a photo that I think will do just that.
That's crazy, man. Look at his pants. That's nuts.
How many boots is he wearing?
I don't know, but he's not even doing like the 04 thing where we were all just rocking that stuff. It's just you're halfway in between wearing like the good pants and the cool pants from way back in the day. Just pick one, Matt, and relax your shoulders, dude. Like,
it's the shoulders for me.
You're in Florida. Like, why are you so tense?
He looks like he's perpetually being like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what to do with my shoulder.
It's very rectangular.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
From his pants to his shoulders to, like, even the shape of his head, it's all very boxy. It's like a Volvo.
It's like a very scary version of Chuck Liddell. That's what I see there. Like, Chuck Liddell's non-intimidating little brother. That's what I see.
Like, came out of the womb as a father of three. Like, wasn't worried about coolness, nothing. Just like, hey, I'm a dad, and this is me. And a coach, if that matters.
This is definitely what Corona thought they were getting when they paid for this stuff.
Oh, this is what the podcast audience loves. Yeah. Us talking about a photo. Brought to you by Corona.
All right, guys, we will close out Debatable presented by Corona with a couple if-thens, and our first one being, if Paul George, playoff P himself, comes back at full strength for the Clippers, then blank.
This is where I was going to say that Jacoby didn't look at the rundown because he says, nobody's talking about the Clippers, and we had a Clippers subject coming up. So, Jacoby, do you want to repeat that, or do you have a new take for it?
Then the Grizzlies are in trouble. That's right.
Huh.
Okay.
The Grizzlies are in trouble in the first round. Playoff P returning to a team that is in good rhythm. You're saying that's going to be the difference against a team that has shocked the rest of the NBA this regular season.
I would never pick the Clippers over the Grizzlies in an actual seven-game series.
So just here, then.
He will likely get hurt again. That's the if then. If he comes back, he will likely not even finish the playoffs healthy. I'm concerned about
playoffs. I would like to know exactly how, if you could break it down for me, how the Clippers remain a decent team right now, given that their best two players have not played. Well, Paul George has only played a little bit this season.
It's Zubac. It's the Zubacissance. This year has been the Zubacissance. Something no one can stop that man. And Reggie Jackson.
So the two teams that you can't explain anything about, how the Grizzlies are 18-2 without Ja, or
I still
how
don't
the Clippers
that the
aren't 18-2.
Are 18-2
you have no idea how they're doing this, but dang it, you might pick an upset.
Yep.
Jacoby said, "Men lie, women lie, numbers lie too."
Yeah. I don't believe the 18-2 stat without Ja. I just don't believe it. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
If PG comes back at full strength, then the Clippers are just set up for a higher level of disappointment, because it just seems to be what they like. That's not going to be good enough. Like, of all years, yeah, there aren't very. It's not like top heavy. Like, it's the Phoenix Suns, and then there's really nobody that absolutely terrifies you. But are you going to beat Phoenix? No. Are you going to face them and set the high, expectations so high and then let down? Probably. And so you're just going to be in the same situation that you've been. And for those who can't see anything, like, a lot of lighting situations going on behind Jacoby there, almost as if that background of New York City is not real.
Mine's real. Look at that. That's New York City.
But yeah, I just think the Clippers have solidified themselves with the help of Ty Lue, as a legitimate team. Like, they're well coached, they've got good pieces, and when they're healthy, can be considered one of the best in the West. But they're nowhere near healthy, and Paul George coming back late in the season isn't going to do much. So, yeah, I think it would just set up a level of disappointment for them, whereas if they're that scrappy team that gives a team a good run in the first round, you can feel pretty good about it.
If Paul George come back at full strength, then they're still getting their ass handed to them by the Memphis Grizzlies. That's right.
Probably still losing. But one thing to keep an eye on is Paul George and Kawhi Leonard's contracts, because we will see. Some tells me that both those players might not be on that team in 2 years.
Quick opinion.
Well, where would they be? Give a prediction.
Vegas or Seattle?
Oh. Ooh. Interesting.
Hey, what do we think about the Mavs real quick? While we're just going off subject, what do we think about the Mavs? Is that a wrap it up sign? It's just on black behind Jacoby.
My legit thoughts about the Mavs are, when they traded Kristaps Porzingis for Davis Bertans and Spencer Dinwiddie, I was like, oh, they're clearly just throwing a white flag on this entire season. They just want to rebuild. They're going to re-put together a new roster to complement Luka next year. So they're just going to, like, mail in this year. The Kristaps Porzingis trade, I really thought, was a white flag to the league. But somehow it's the complete opposite. They're much better now. They play better defense. Dinwiddie is perfect at spelling Luka when he's not there. Even when he is there, he helps, being another threat to drive and facilitate and playmake. And, like, their defense is undeniable. Like, I really feel that the Mavs and Grizzlies are two teams that I do not think will compete for the Western Conference title this year, but they will for the next 3 years.
So you're calling them a second-round exit then? Basically, yeah, give the Suns a tough win in the second round. And
depends. They'll probably end up playing like the Jazz or the Nuggets. And I think the Mavs win a playoff series. Luka wins his first playoff series this year.
All right. Ooh. Look at that. Totally off subject. And we went with another lukewarm take there.
Luka
warm take. Jacoby. Luka warm take. Anything left, or are we going to call it?
We got one more, and I just would be remiss without saying that the Clippers have stayed afloat. Probably not because of the Regisance or the Zubacissance, but because Ty Lue is an excellent coach who gets consistently underrated and adjusts to whoever's on his roster. But I digress.
Yes, and his back and forth with Daryl Morey.
All right, our last topic. A personal favorite of mine. If Dan Campbell does Dan Campbell things on Hard Knocks this season, then blank.
Then I might actually watch for the first time in a long time. I think the last time I got pump faked by Hard Knocks was the Antonio Brown season with the Raiders. Like one episode. And then, not saying that was their fault. That was pretty much Antonio Brown's fault. But that was the last time I committed. This is probably the closest I'll get, because I don't really have much sort of emotional investment in the Lions. But Dan Campbell, I can be entertained by that.
Yeah, I think if Dan Campbell does Dan Campbell things on Hard Knocks this season, then it'll be watchable because as we sit here on March 29th, there's not a lot of reasons to be excited or interested in this Detroit Lions team. That can change if they pick like Malik Willis with the second pick in the draft. But as things stand now, I think Dan Campbell might have to carry the show because there's really not a whole lot else going on. But I think that it'll be interesting from the standpoint that Dan Campbell's like a pretty good dude. And I think I think it'd be really cool to like explore his personality with a little bit of an unfiltered look, even if it's not as unfiltered as it used to be way back in the days when Rex Ryan was on.
Yeah, well, I think he became a little bit human this year, right? Whereas before, he was just a caricature. And now it's just like, oh, okay, he's got emotions and he's actually doing a job here. So that part probably be less interesting to see.
Somehow Dan Campbell got celebrated for them like not losing by 21 every week. Like if you like look back at the Lions last year, like they were really, really bad. I think they had like 2 wins and a tie. Yeah, 3 wins and a tie. But for some reason, like, man, when they lost, they really tried hard when they were losing. They were some try-hard losers. Dan Campbell really had this team putting in an effort to maybe cover the spread that was,
okay,
that was 10
points. It was fun. It was fun, though, because they would, like, do onside kicks in the first quarter and go for two when other teams wouldn't do it. Like, they're pulling out all the stops. It was at least entertaining for a 3-13 team.
So let me just finish us with a question. Do you think if Dan Campbell does Dan Campbell things on Hard Knocks, is that going to be good or bad for Dan Campbell's job security? Because he does have this, like, likability thing to him, but there's also, like, he's an anti-Belichick. Like, he just sort of seems like he doesn't really pour over, you know, sleepless nights going through X's and O's in film. Yeah. He just seems to be, like, a football bro that just kind of, like, rolls the balls out.
But I think that's
going to probably be excused as him just doing it for the cameras.
But I think the Dan Campbell personality is a good thing because where they were with Matt Patricia very recently, I mean, there was Kaylin Kaler of Defector. She wrote an article basically where all these former Matt Patricia players were saying how unpleasant he was to work with and how like guys were just trying to get out of there at the end of the season. And, you know, maybe Dan Campbell isn't like as X and O's as Belichick disciples, but I don't know. I think there's something to being a good person occasionally.
Do the Lions practice outdoors?
Yes,
I'm pretty sure. Training camp?
Yeah.
Okay. I was a little worried because I didn't think we'd maybe see wouldn't see any sprinklers this year on the Hard Knocks and, you know, sprinkling the field because that's like one of the best things, one of the most soothing things to look at. But what do you do if it's indoors? Like you just pan the lights, I guess.
It's soothing to look at?
We'll get sprinklers and we'll get Dan Campbell and we'll get him eating kneecaps. We'll get some great new quotes. There'll be at least one thing every week where we'll be like, I can't believe Dan Campbell said blank. And then they're going to end up 3-13-1 again. And somehow Dan Campbell's going to still have a job. I don't know how it works this way, but it does.
What you're not going to get is an explanation as to why the organization has been so bad over decades. It's just going to be like, oh, wow, they seem to operate like everybody else. Why do they keep losing?
They always.
So we're not going to get that answer. Lose.
How's your flag football team doing, by the way? Now there's 8 seconds left. How are we doing? Where
out
are we
of
in season. The season?
We're out of season. A new season is starting up in second week of April. I'm actually excited. I'm not even going to be a captain. I'm just going to be a free agent. So who knows
where I'm going to end up
or how I'm going to be utilized. I could be the Taysom Hill of this league. You never know.
He just called himself the Taysom Hill of the flag football league.
Which has never been more of an insult ever than on this show. Gee, didn't realize Charles felt that way.
The Saints are like the evil empire of the NFL, man. Ugh, disgusting.
He's a disgusting great name franchise. For a team that's going to be evil, Falcons, then. Man.
Yeah.
Go get Matt Rule some pants.
Yeah.
Go get a
let's
Corona, see, people.
Let's see, the LaMelo game.
See you guys. Pants.
Oh, I love the glitter.
Send me some Corona.